Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And good morning. Welcome to the Hoosier Report. Lee Kelly sitting in for Matt Dennison on this Wednesday, 27th day of June. Glad you're along with us this morning. Let's take a short look at what we're going to be talking about today. First of all, our lineup for today, the guest lineup presented by Honey Baked Ham, located in the Northgate Shopping Center off Grantline Road in New Albany. And if you're looking for an outstanding ham, that's the place to go. I'm a customer. I go there often, and that's about the best information I can give to you. Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Well, we have Jeff Rabjohns lined up for you this morning. We'll be talking with Jeff about some of the new names that have come out of recruiting list for players here in Indiana at the high school level. Maybe even get in a little bit about the IU baseball job and what it's going to take to bring in a name that somebody that can continue the build that has taken place through the last two coaches. And we'll talk a little bit about that. And then Greg Mingelt going to join us for the third and fourth segments. And a lot of information out there. We're going to talk about the awards last night, the News and Tribune Awards, honoring high school athletes here in our area. Fun event last night. You heard it here on WXVW. And we're going to talk about the young people, talk about the awards and how the whole process comes about. They finished last night. They'll be starting again here in just a couple of months when the fall high school sports seasons open up, and they'll be keeping an eye on all of the schools in the area and the players involved in those. So that's what's coming up on the show today. Let's get in a little bit about a coach at Carmel High School. Ted Winland was the girls coach at Carmel High School, and there's been a lot of information not only written about this in publications, but on the internet. It's been a hot topic, and talking about today's players, today's parents, and the way coaches are treated. Winland was actually let go, had a successful coaching career at Carmel, and some parents apparently went to the school corporation administration and complained about playing time for their children, complained about some of his coaching techniques. And in the end, 21 apparently of the 24 players in the total program liked the man. Three didn't, and the school corporation got rid of him. So it's an interesting situation. And as I said, there's been a lot of publications that have written not just about high school basketball or even high school sports, but in some ways as well, they have talked about Little League, or they've talked about travel teams, or they've talked about a number of things, and it's just interesting to follow. I, other than working with Matt following Little League, don't have a lot of interaction with people who have children of that age group, so not sure I'm an expert on any of this or anything else for that matter. So what I will say is I am told by people that are out and about that it all has changed, that parents want their kids to play every inning of every game and let the coach figure out how that's all supposed to happen. So the one thing I did enjoy was the coach talking about, first of all, that the Carmel whole situation was a train wreck when they got rid of him. And he mentions that he hates it that the world of parents is all about entitlement, unicorns, and rainbows. Love that quote. So an interesting situation there. Has it happened locally? Maybe. I don't know. But it's a situation that I think we're going to hear more and more about as we move up into future years. It's just one of those things that we're going to find out about. I think coaches are under a lot of pressure to play the right people the right amount of times, and when they don't, trumped up charges are brought against the coaches, and not a good situation necessarily. Also, Indiana looking for a new baseball coach. That happened on Sunday night. Chris Lemonis going to Mississippi State, and part of the reason, probably money, making a little over $300,000 in base salary at IU. That number's going to jump up to about $600,000 at Mississippi State. And so that's, I'm sure, part of the reason. When you can double your base salary, not a bad deal. Facilities at Mississippi State supposedly very good and getting better. Certainly the SEC at this point, a better baseball conference than the Big Ten, although the Big Ten is improving. But it's going to be interesting to see how all of that plays out, who they are able to hire, and will they continue to let that program grow. We have some local players that are going to be a part of that IU program next year. Sammy Barnett at Silver Creek, one that comes to mind. So it does have an effect on players in our area, or could have an effect. So we'll see how all that plays out. We'll talk with Jeff Rabjohns about that a little bit as well. Also, we have some new rankings of high school players in the different classes. And if I can get to my notes here, we'll see what we have. These are from Kyle Nedenrep in the Indianapolis Star. And looking at the class of 2020, actually it's going to be 2021, and one of the names, and I was told this a couple of weeks ago, that a young man that New Albany fans at least have seen, Anthony Leal, he's going to be a junior this year at Bloomington South. He's now listed as the number two player in that class of 2021. Outstanding player, and New Albany fans can see him at the Doghouse. I believe that will be Thanksgiving weekend again. Looking forward to that. And on a more local note, Trey Coleman of Jeffersonville comes in at number four. Coleman, a lot of potential on the upside, it says, as a sophomore. Saw him play some this summer in the Kentuckiana Summer League, and he has grown and he has filled out, and he looks fantastic playing in that summer league. So certainly looking forward to that. As we move on down the list, we are going to find a New Albany Bulldog coming in at the number 13 spot, Julian Hunter. They list him at 6'3". Saw him the other day. I believe he's grown some from that. But also watching Hunter play for New Albany in that summer league, and Julian as aggressive, or actually far more aggressive on the court than I've seen him in his days at New Albany on the varsity. He's been a two-year starter already, just entering his junior year, but he is very aggressive around the basket, gathering rebounds, putting in shots. He's taking more outside shots than I've seen him take, but Julian comes in at that number 13 spot, and certainly looking forward to that. So those are local players that are getting some mention in the class of 2021. Make that 2020. Good to see Julian and Trey on that list. And if I can get back here, We actually don't have anybody local in the class of 2021. We have some players from the not-too-distant area that are getting some recognition, and if I can get to that spot here on my computer, we'll talk a little bit about that. They are not in the top five, but there are some outstanding players in the mostly central part of the state that we're looking at right now. As the years go on, that kind of branches out, and that's when we see local players for the most part. Kurt Hopp of Forest Park, one mention to watch in that class. From Paoli, Brent Bosley, and from Southridge, Colson Montgomery. So those are players that have made a name for themselves early in their high school careers, and certainly we'll keep an eye on them as well. And I've got to believe that there are some local players coming along that are going to be mentioned as well as we move along. So I'm sure some of you are saying it is the end of June and you're still talking basketball. Well, it's Indiana. It is especially Southern Indiana. We always talk about basketball. So those are things that are going on. We're going to find out a little bit more from Jeff Rabjohns about the IU team camp that was held last weekend. I'm anxious to find out about that camp and about who stood out in that. We've gotten a couple of reports about how teams did, but certainly trying to find out about that. So that's the Hoosier headlines this morning. We'll talk a little bit more as we go along here, get more information. So the headlines brought to you by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. Outstanding food, good people. Hoosiers, let's make that Hoopster's Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. Good place to visit. Matter of fact, for lunch today wouldn't be bad. So we're going to take our first break of the day. We'll be back with Jeff Rabjohns and talk about recruits, talk about the IU camp, talk about some other things going on with IU and high school sports. You're listening to the Hoosier Report on 1450 and 96.1 WXVW.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
Welcome back to the Hoosier Report. Lee Kelly setting in for Matt Dennison. Matt will be back with you tomorrow morning. And our next guest from Pigs.com, Jeff Rabjohns. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, good morning. How are we doing?
So far, so good. Let's see if I can keep from messing it up here. Jeff,
there you go.
It is June, and we're talking about a team camp at IU, and that seems to be big news for a lot of people. So were you at the team camp for part of the day or all of the days?
I was there all day, both days, morning till the last game, both on Saturday and on Sunday. A lot of good players there.
Well, and that's what I want to talk about. You can be my eyes and ears and tell me all about who stood out as individuals, who stood out as teams that we can kind of keep an eye on in the 1920 season.
Sure. I guess we can start with players. It's more of a recruiting type of function. It's not it's a team camp as far as a team's play a slate of games, not like a tournament or anything like that. But there were quite a few players who you would call standouts. Certainly Trace Jackson Davis was on that list. He had two games where he was just completely dominant. The biggest thing that stood out was how he can play out in the open court with a live dribble. He brought the ball up court at times. There are times he caught passes near half court on the run, put it on the deck, was able to make moves. He's really developed his ability to drive on the inside because he's so long, hold the ball way out with his left hand and kind of finish with layups or with those kind of like swooping dunks that are almost – I don't know if I want to say his trademark, but certainly a store, you know, a move that he's really kind of known for at this point. So he's certainly a guy who's on that list. Another guy who is on that list is Jaden Ivey, 2020 from Mishawaka, Marion. He's a guard. He's the son of Neil Ivey, former WNBA player. He had a game of 8 3-pointers on Sunday, shot the ball really, really well. Anthony Leo from Bloomington South, 6'4", 2020 guard. He had a number of good games, averaged 16.5 points, made 10 threes over the weekend. He's obviously been to Indiana a number of times, being there from Bloomington, has parents who worked there at the university. So he's incredibly familiar with IU basketball. And he's somebody that IU has watched a lot. Doesn't have an offer just yet, but if there's somebody you were going to jot down to pay attention to as far as guys to watch to see if IU may offer in July, Anthony Leal is among the players on that list. And then a couple guys from out of state who were really good. Kid named Keon Johnson from the Webb School down in Tennessee, 6'5", shooting guard, a really big-time athlete, probably could make a case that he was the best athlete there. Made shots, drove it, handled it, played and finished well above the rim. Another big-time athlete who was there, and this is going to sound crazy, Lee, so don't think I've lost my marbles, but there's a kid named Kamari Lands who is going to be a freshman. And yes, I know that sounds silly, going to be a freshman. I can't believe I'm even saying that, at Indianapolis Cathedral, who is the guy you look at and you say, he's got a chance to be the next star from the state. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be. I'm just saying that's what they look like when they have a chance to get there. And he certainly has a chance. He's about 6'5" already, shoots it, handles it, can play point, can play off guard, can almost really play the three with the way the game is played today. But he's certainly a guy who did well. Trey Galloway, 2020 guard from Culver, didn't have his best day. He played on Sunday only, but he's coming back from a hamstring injury. But he's really a guy who plays big-time basketball IQ, very savvy. You know, his dad's a longtime coach. DJ Hughes, 2021 forward from Lawrence North, 6'7", real bouncy. Kurt Hoff, 2021 from Forest Park, a forward. When he got to play facing the basket, you could really see a lot of potential there. When he was made to play in the post, kind of so-so. But when he faced the basket, it was a different deal. You know, so those are some of the guys. I know I'm going to forget somebody, but Tyson Acuff, 2020 point guard from Detroit Cass Tech. He's another guy who had a pretty solid camp. Another guy that I think IU may take a look at here moving forward. So those are players. As far as teams, you know, New Albany played really well as a team. Obviously, the star, Romeo Langford, is gone. But I still think that's a team that's going to be a really solid basketball team. I like the way they played. I like the way they played together. Bloomington South was very good. They should be good. Indianapolis Cathedral. Oh, I forgot to mention Armon Franklin. You know, obviously he played really, really well. 2019 combo guard who has an offer from IU. He played well also. So Cathedral is a team that's going to be good. Bloomington South is going to be very good. They lose Chance Coyle, but they've got some really nice pieces. Bloomington South played both days, went 6-0 for the event. So they're a team to watch. Certainly Culver, they got everything back from last year's 3A title team. I think they're the team that you look at and say, okay, somebody's going to have to knock them off. Mishawaka Marion also with Jaden Ivey, they've got some good pieces. They're probably one player short from being a title contender, but they're certainly a really interesting team.
And I probably should have asked this question before I ask you the one about the players and coaches. I know most people know about a team camp. They probably understand the concept. But for some people that might be listening today going, what the heck is a team camp? And yeah. I'm sure they figured out that, you know, you bring your team, you come in. So, first of all, tell us, why would IU have a team camp? What is it, and why would they have one?
Sure, sure. Team camp is where high school teams go to a college and play games, play against other high school teams. Some can be from your state, some can be from out of state, what have you. So that's what it is. It's not like a tournament. There's no winner. You play a certain amount of games. The reason to have it is kind of multifold. One, you get players who you're looking at on your campus, and it's kind of like a pseudo unofficial visit in a way. And you get them on campus. Usually parents come to these things. Obviously, high school coaches are there. Maybe if the guy's got a trainer, the trainer comes. So you get a player and parents and coaches all on campus. That's one thing that's good. Two, there's open communication during these events. Unlike AAU, where coaches can't, after games, go talk to players and parents and all that kind of stuff. Well, you know, then live evaluation periods in AAU, coaches can watch and they can, like, text after if the player is a junior or senior. But at a team camp, it's open communication. You know, you watch a kid, you know, or, hey, you know, so-and-so's gonna play at 10. Hey, you know, get over there, say hi to mom and dad, watch him play. You know, I mean, you know, sometimes an assistant coach would even sit with a parent while the game was going on. So all that is, you know, 100% allowed at a team camp. So that's another reason, is the communication that you can have, and it's relationship building. And I think the other thing is, it's just enormous goodwill to get people on your campus, high school players, high school teams, high school coaches, assistant coaches, parents, trainers, all that. I mean, I saw so many teams after they got done playing, they took pictures of themselves in Assembly Hall at Center Court with five national championship banners hanging in the background. Kids are going to post that on social media. Coaches are going to post that on social media. I mean, it's automatic free goodwill for your university. And you just make so many more personal connections. I mean, Archie Miller and his assistants, Tom Ostrom, Ed Schilling, Boozer Flint, support people like Brian Walsh, Gladstein, Bill Colmar, others. I mean, they made sure to go up and say hi to as many people as they could possibly do. I don't know if a staff could have worked harder at saying hello to people and introducing themselves and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, there were some teams who had never been to Cook Hall before. There were some high school coaches from the state of Indiana who told me, man, this is really cool. So, well, yeah, what's the big deal? Oh, we've never been invited to even see Cook Hall before. Like, really? Yeah, never. No, nobody ever called us and said, hey, you guys want to come see this? So there's a goodwill component to it. So that's basically the Cliff Notes version of what a team camp is and sort of why colleges do it.
Now, and that was my next question, is this something that is widespread? There are a lot, or maybe most, or maybe all of the D1 colleges, and maybe some lower level also, that do things like this?
It is fairly widespread. Not everybody does it. Some colleges just don't see the need for it, like the Dukes of the world. But an awful lot of schools do have them. You know, I mean, even really established programs. You know, Michigan State has a team camp every year. And obviously they've got, you know, a slew of Final Fours over the last 20 years. You know, Indiana does it. You know, I would say it's fairly widespread across the major college level. And, yeah, small colleges do it as well. You know, there are guys up north who, you know, go to the Bethel team camp. So you're talking about an NAIA school. I think Wabash and DePaul still have them. I think Anderson still has one. So you're talking about Division III schools there. So a lot of schools do this, again, to get kids on campus, to get FaceTime with people, and try to build relationships.
You know, at a time before all of the social media, the kids would come back and they would talk to their friends and the parents would talk to their friends, and that's pretty much where it would end. You mentioned the kids taking pictures at Center Court, at Assembly Hall with the banners in the background. That's going to go on social media and be spread very wide area. So things have changed, and it sounds like you're telling me that this IU coaching staff, very aware of social media, very aware of trying to get the IU brand name out there and encourage people, if not to send their kids there to play, to buy season tickets or watch the games on TV, somehow get behind the IU program.
Yeah, I think they. I think they're aware of all that, and I think they do things to, you know, increase the brand without coming across like a used car salesman. You know, it's more organic, it's more genuine. You know, when people actually get interaction with an IU coach, I mean, obviously there's some players who are there who are or could be recruiting targets. There's other players there who are just good high school players, and you know they're not going to go play at IU. They might not even play college basketball. You know, or if they do, it's not going to be at the major college level. But there are some kids who wanted to go up and shake Archie Miller's hand, and there's some kids who just wanted to get a picture with an IU assistant or what have you, and they were all very accommodating. And Archie Miller, if the kid came up and said hi, after a game that Archie had watched, well, what'd you think, coach? Hey, here's what you work on, or just shaking hands and saying good game, good to see you. Yeah, you want a picture, no problem. Well, those are all positive things that just sort of translate into just general goodwill. And again, I think with this staff, it's truly, I think it's genuine. Like for an example, Tom Ostrom's been one of the key guys in recruiting Trace Jackson Davis, the 6'9" 5-star forward from Center Grove. And Ostrom spent a lot of time at Center Grove, and some of the kids down there, I mean, they think they know him. You know, he walks in the gym and they're all like, "Oh, hey, Coach O, all right, come over here. We got to get the picture." And then they're all gathered around and he'll smile and boom, they'll take a picture. And I'm sitting there going, "Oh, I know what's happening." 10 minutes later, all those kids have posted that photo of them with Coach O up on Facebook. So I think little things like that, just interacting with people, certainly help the connection that IU has overall with fans.
Okay, one final question. By the way, we're talking with Jeff Rabjohns of Pigs.com. Jeff, what about the IU baseball program? We lost a good one in Chris Lemonis. His base salary goes from about $300,000 a year to $600,000 a year, so it's hard to begrudge the man moving to Mississippi State. But any early scuttlebutt about who might be on the short list for coaches for IU, or just still way too early to even get into that?
Well, there's been a lot of rumors and chatter. There's been, some guys like Ty Neal, a former assistant, and people have even wondered, could IU get Tracy Smith to come back from Arizona State? I'm trying to blank on the name, but the guy from Southern Indiana, University of Southern Indiana, who's done very well down there, has been mentioned. There's some other people who are assistants at some other places. Ironically, the former Mississippi State coach from a couple coaching cycles ago also was mentioned. So IU is going to take a look. They really want to sustain the success. I think they understand that while IU has put a big investment into baseball, arguably among the most invested in baseball of the northern schools, one of the issues is that just trying to keep somebody who is as good as Lemonis at a northern school is unbelievably difficult. A lot of people look at IU and say, well, that's a really successful baseball program. For northern baseball, that's true. But Indiana has one College World Series appearance. Mississippi State has 10. Indiana has 8 NCAA tournament appearances. Mississippi State has like 30. Some people were asking me, like, why in the world would you ever leave Indiana? I'm like, what if a coach was really successful at Mississippi State coaching basketball? There was an opening at Indiana, and the guy left Mississippi State to coach at Indiana in basketball. What would you think? Oh, no-brainer. History, tradition, look at the programs. I'm like, yeah, flip it, that's baseball. So, Indiana's kind of in a situation where that's what it has to a degree with its baseball program. So it'll be interesting because I think if you could get Tracy Smith to come back, I kind of wonder, would he stay for an extended period of time? That's what I wonder. Because he was the guy who spearheaded the work to get the facilities where they are and everything. That was really – IU baseball is what it is because of Tracy Smith as a coach and as the overall director of the program. It'll be interesting to see which direction they go. But I think with all the resources that they have and the amount of money that they put into baseball, And IU has really put more money into baseball than although a lot of schools up north. Now, again, it's totally different from stuff down south. I mean, Mississippi State Stadium seats like 13,000. It looks like a mini major league park. I mean, it's unbelievable. But anyway, I think IU will get a good coach. I think IU baseball will continue to do well because they have a facilities advantage here up north.
Good enough. Jeff Rabjohns, thank you very much for joining me this morning here on the Hoosier Report, and have a great day.
My pleasure, man. Always good talking with you, and I hope to see you soon again, my friend.
Thank you very much. Talk to you later. Jeff Rabjohns of Pigs.com, our guest. We're going to take a break. Be right back. Greg Mingeld of the News and Tribune. We're going to talk about the award ceremony last night, the winners, and talk about high school sports, which we love to do. So we're going to take a break. You're listening to the Hoosier Report here on 1450 and 96.1 WXVW.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
Back with you on the Hoosier Report. Lee Kelly sitting in for Matt Dennison this morning, and joining us here on segment three, Greg Mingeld of the News and Tribune. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. Good to see you again.
We just saw each other last night at the awards night, and let's talk a little bit about that. The News and Tribune giving out awards and honoring high school athletes from around the area, and I thought another successful night. I think this is the third one, maybe the fourth one that I've been to, but I think they're all great, and I think it just continues to build and be what it should be, a very special evening.
Yeah, it was, as I was saying to you during the break, it may have been the most fun that I've had at one of these, and they're fun every year. It's a lot of, you get to see some for the last time, maybe. A lot of the great athletes that you've covered for the last 4 years or for that year, depending on kids' grades. It's not only seniors. So, but really good last chance to see everybody before, you know, you kind of turn the page toward next year. And it's really a cool thing to be able to honor these kids like this and, you know, something that has been a vision of for our newspaper for about a decade now, that's really kind of reached a point where it's a pretty big success and a lot of people talking about it. And so looking forward to number six next year.
I understand. Thinking back, let's do a little history thing here. How did this all come about? You mentioned it was discussed a decade ago or so. So was it in a meeting? Was it a passing comment somebody made? Was it another awards like the ESPN, ESPYs, and so on? What exactly sparked that first idea to start the planning?
I honestly don't remember. It's been something that's, the ESPY Awards have been around for a long time and kind of had the idea of this is something that we wanted to do. What would be the best way to pull it off? I'm still not sure we've 100% nailed that down. Like I said, last night we had seven nominees who were Division I athletes who have already gone to college to begin their college careers who weren't able to be there last night. And, things like that. It doesn't look like there's a perfect date because when you do it during the summer, it's you're going to miss some people. If you did it during the school year, you're going to miss some sports. And so there's really, I think we've found a pretty good place, I think. And, started at IU Southeast and moved to Eastside Christian Church, which has been a fantastic host for us. We've got Stephen Allen, who basically runs the thing behind the scenes, who does a fantastic job. And origin, I'm not exactly remember, but I do remember about 6 years ago, our publisher, Bill Hansen, coming to me and saying, hey, we're going to do this. So It's gotten smoother and smoother every year, but I think we can do even better moving forward.
I think it's fantastic. I thought the first one was excellent, and it just gets better every year. But it can't be cheap to do this because you guys put together an outstanding program with pictures of every young person nominated. You go on and put together just a very special evening, stars on the floor with each person's name that was nominated, just little things that take it from just coming in and handing someone a plaque to making it a really special evening. But it's not cheap to do it that way. So you guys invest not only a lot of time, but a lot of money in doing this.
Yeah, it's a lot of, I wouldn't say it's a money-making operation for sure. It's more of a goodwill, something that we want to do, not something that we feel obligated to do. So I don't think that, obviously, there are people with whom that is a big factor, the output of what we do. To me, it's just time. And as far as I'm concerned, it's time well spent. All year, you know, building up to it, we spend a lot of time with it in the pages, which is a good thing. And I have no idea about the the expenses. That's not my job, but it's well worth whatever we do because it's a great event, and really happy that it's gone down the way it has. If you had told me 6 years ago that this is where we'd be, I'd have been thrilled with the end result. So it was good to see everybody last night and be able to do that one more time. And now, like I said, you'd think it's an exaggeration that I said I'm looking forward to number six. We'll start working on that in about a week. So
I knew that was coming.
That's one thing, is it's kind of a year-round venture. I think somebody last night at the office said it's about a 11-month year for the Netsby Awards.
All right, Greg Mingell to the News and Tribune, our guest this morning. Greg, let's get into the winners from last night, and let's start with the Girls Golfer of the Year. Mm-hmm. And
that was Kaylin Hook of New Albany. And before we run through all these, I want to say that I thought the committee did a great job this year. We have a 5-person committee who picked the winners, and this is the first year where I didn't have any objections, I should say, to the winners, where I didn't leave the room saying, I think they got that wrong. There've been at least one person or one winner every year where I thought the committee got it wrong. This year, for the first time, there was probably one that I would have probably picked differently, but it was a toss up. But the rest of them, I think they got right. And so I think they're getting better at it too.
In a lot of cases this year, especially, it was tough because you had three outstanding people nominated.
Right.
Some years it's kind of a no brainer in some, yes, of them, but this year, almost up and down the board, you had quality people at every one of these sports.
Yeah. Some of them, the job was really hard. Nothing against any of these other sports, but volleyball, baseball, boys basketball, and I think there were maybe a couple of, track and field, where there were multiple people who were deserving. I mean, Tremaine Gonzalez had two top 14 finishes in the state track meet. Poor kid doesn't get an award last night because we had a state champion as well. So, and wrestling, we had three. Top, you know, we had kids at state finals didn't get nominated. For baseball, we had last year's three nominees were juniors. None of them were nominated again this year. That's an incredible thing. And all three had great seasons. It's not like any of them didn't have a great season. So, and like I said last night, what an amazing senior class individually, just far better than any we've ever had.
All right, let's move on and talk about the winners. Let's go to boys tennis. And the winner was?
It was Keith Asplund from Jeffersonville. And I want to say also Kaylin Hook was the lone state finalist. So that was a pretty easy pick, I think, for the committee.
Girls soccer player of the year?
Maggie Day of Silver Creek.
Boys Soccer Player of the Year
was Austin Hughes of Providence.
Boys Cross Country Runner of the Year,
Skylar Stidham from Christian Academy, who was
what a career that young man yes. had.
And he was one of those athletes who was is already at IU and finished third in the state in cross country. So that was a pretty easy one too.
Girls Cross Country Runner of the Year
was Kylie Sorg from Floyd Central.
Volleyball Player of the Year.
Yeah, you talk about a tough one, man. Three All-Americans. How do you pick among three All-Americans? And this may have been the one. And again, and I know she won't take it this way. Nothing against Marissa, but Allie Stumler, man, that was a tough choice. And I remember the committee meeting how tough that one was.
Absolutely. Football Player of the Year.
Darquan Richardson of New Albany.
Boys Basketball Player of the Year.
What's his name? Fourth year in a row, Romeo Langford is our Boys Player of the Year.
It'll be a while before we see a four-year-in-a-row winner, I think,
yes,
in any sport.
Well, actually, next year, Hallie Trinkle from Providence will be the
That's what
third,
I said. Next year,
one.
We'll probably have
another. Hallie Trinkle from Providence will probably be the third one that we've had.
Okay. Girls Basketball Player of the Year.
Ann Garcia from Jeffersonville. That
outstanding
was a close
player.
One, too.
Yeah, and there were outstanding talent all across the board. Boys Swimmer of the Year.
Dylan Freiberger from Floyd Central.
Girls Swimmer.
For the third year in a row, Rachel Walker from Jeffersonville. She's at Bellarmine.
Wrestler of the Year.
Tristan Selmer from Floyd Central. Again, tough field. The other two guys in the wrestling field were Athlete of the Year finalists as well. So, a great field.
Great field. You're right. Lost my place here. Softball Player of the Year.
Lexi McAfee from Henryville.
Baseball Player of the Year.
Again, man, incredible field. Ethan English from Jeffersonville had to bat 600 to be the Player of the Year.
You know, and I've done games with Ethan playing, but I've never been next to him. He's a lot bigger young man than he looks like in the press box.
Big guy.
He is a big guy.
Indiana Wesleyan got a good one.
Well, and he's reconsidering. He was telling us last night, so we'll see how that.
Now, Indiana Wesleyan's got a good one.
Got a good one. You're absolutely right. Some of the bigger schools talking to him now, and that's interesting to keep an eye on, but he had an outstanding season. Boys Track and Field.
State champion Skylar Stidham.
Girls Track and Field Athlete of the Year.
Leah Winford from Jeffersonville, who was eighth in the state in the 200-meter dash.
Very nice young lady. First time I met her, and just a very nice young lady. Girls Tennis Player of the Year.
And before we get to state champion Hallie Trinkle from Providence, I want to say that was the other thing that made it so enjoyable is how engaging the kids were. You know, a lot of times you get the, it's media, I don't really. So many kids last night, so nice, so thoughtful when they came on the radio with you. And when they talked with us. If it was a bunch of, like, the word I used last night, knuckleheads. If it was a bunch of knuckleheads, this wouldn't be as much fun. But, man, what a great group of kids last night.
Boys Golfer of the Year.
I'm sorry. Just lost my train of thought. Jay Williams from Jeffersonville, state finalist.
Had an outstanding state finals. I followed them with that live scoring that's now available. Love the internet because you can follow these things. But put together a great state finals to go with a great year.
He was a three-time finalist, so good to see him win it.
Absolutely. Boys Player of the Year.
Now we're in the special awards. This is for the best player of anyone we just named. And, of course, Romeo Langford won it for the third year in a row.
And Girls Player of the Year?
Again, state champion tennis player Hallie Trinkle. And, she was a state champion, and that still wasn't an easy call because of the two volleyball All-Americans were her competition.
Boys Multisport Athlete of the Year?
Aaron Mosley from New Albany, who was first-team All-Conference and first-team All-Area in three sports.
Girls Multisport Athlete of the Year?
And that would be Natalie Bosing of Providence. Great tennis, cross country, and basketball player.
Boy Student Athlete of the Year.
Yeah, Braxton Sequeira of Floyd Central was, he was up for, we really considered him for Athlete of the Year finalist, and also he was first in his class. So that was probably the easiest choice of the night.
Girl Student Athlete of the Year.
Maddie Nexel of Charlestown, again, another great kid.
And Coach of the Year.
Joe Decker from Silver Creek Baseball.
And, all right, you're going to have to help me out here because my computer has something in front of the rest of them.
Okay. Our team of the year.
There it is.
Our team of the year was Silver Creek baseball. That's kind of what we kind of bill as our the biggest award of the night. Went to Silver Creek baseball, and that one was tough too. I mean, you had three really good cases. Providence girls tennis for the went to state for the second year in a row in a non-class sport, and then Christian Academy volleyball moves up a class and still gets to the state final. So that was a tough one too.
Inspiration award.
I went to Sammy Barnett, who had Tommy John surgery, came back and helped lead Silver Creek baseball to the state championship.
And a lifetime achievement award.
That was Pat Hennigan, the Jeffersonville historian. And in my time at the News and Tribune, very few people have had a more positive impact on what we do from outside of our building than Pat Hennigan had. And it was good to be able to honor him.
It is so good that there are people like that out there that keep track of things, that know things, and you just about have to have that to keep the school knowing and going and so on. Yeah. I asked the Silver Creek people the other night. I tried to find it online when Silver Creek opened. And I'm a Silver Creek alum, but I don't know when that school opened, and I couldn't find it. And finally, I saw a group at a summer basketball game, and George Girth was one of the ones there, and he said, 1926. I said, how did you know that? And he said, well, I read it somewhere, and a this and a that, but he said it was a consolidation. So now we're trying to go back and figure out who the consolidation was with, because I had never heard that in my life. So
yeah, it's a we have more information on Jeffersonville athletics than we have on than any school I've ever seen because of the efforts of Pat, not just in the time that he was there, but he went back through history and put together everything that he could find. And man, what a great contribution he made to local high school athletics.
And I'm sure he utilized the News and Tribune to find a lot of that information.
He utilized the Evening News and the New Albany Tribune. So he had to go through two of them.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right. That was before the consolidation.
But,
all right.
Yeah, that was great to be able to honor him.
We're going to take a break here, our final break of the day, and then we'll be back and close it all out. Talk a little bit more with Greg here from the News and Tribune. You're listening to the Hoosier Report on WXVW 1450 and 96.1. And that's going to wrap it up for the Hoosier Report for this Wednesday morning. We thank our guest, Greg Mingeld of the News and Tribune, and Jeff Rabjohns. So, Matt Dennison back with you tomorrow here on the Hoosier Report. Thank you for joining me this morning. Have a great day. You're listening to WXVW.